serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with 102-year-old George Vandersloos, who lives at the California Veterans Home right in the middle of the Golden State in Fresno. The facility is only 5 years old. It still looks brand new. George has been here for about 2 years. Before that, he lived at the Veterans Home in his native Minneapolis, Minnesota, where more than once he participated in the Minnesota Twins tradition of having a veteran raise the flag before their baseball games. He was raising a flag aboard the USS Honolulu, a cruiser at Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. We've heard about that and some of what he faced with the 10th Amphibious Tractor Battalion, part of the 4th Marine Division, which in February of 1945 headed for a now famous but then pretty unknown volcanic island in the Pacific. Had you ever heard of Iwo Jima before?
No, I hadn't heard of Iwo Jima or Saipan or Tinian or any of those islands. Iwo Jima, who'd ever heard of that, you know? Well, that was our last operation. Our home base was Maui. When we would get through with an operation, we'd go back to Maui, lick our wounds, and do a little more training, and take off again. And we did that 3 times. So that kept us busy. I think many times about the buddies I had that were killed. But you can't dwell on that all your life.
What stands out about Iwo Jima? I mean, I know there are a lot of reasons that it was a unique situation, but as you experienced it.
Iwo was about the rottenest operation we ever had. I mean, they had this hill, mountain, whatever you want to call it, at the end of, what end of the Iwo Jima? Sarabachi. And we landed right below it. You see a lot of fire coming out of that thing. In the meantime, this group, I don't know who they were, worked their way up to the top. That's where the flag ceremony came into play. But, no, I had all I wanted at Sarabachi. The nights we put in there, they were well dug in and they were well fortified. Well, they'd been there a long time. They would, boy, open up and they would start dropping bombs. And then all of a sudden, here come the Jap planes. See, we were at a disadvantage. They were well fortified, well fortified.
How long were you there?
Maybe a week. We were getting ready to, in fact, we made way for the ship clean out of the States. They were loaded with the goodies, and they were sitting out in the harbor, and they had just got pulled in from the States. So it was our time to leave. So we got out to this one ship, brand new one, and man, they had stakes, and the war wasn't over in that particular spot. It was later that night, we got the word we had to go back in. The Japs had busted through, and everything was utter chaos, so back we go. We went in on a whale boats, whatever they had. It wasn't at all inviting. It was a botched affair there, but we spent that day, the next day there, and we got back in the boats and headed back to the ship. That's the one that took us to Maui. It was the catch-as-catch-can. You didn't know whether you were going to go aboard or go underboard or...
You mentioned that iconic image of the flag being raised atop Mount Suribachi. That was actually the second flag they put up there, as I understand. But did you ever see either one of those flags flying on top of the mountain?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very definitely. They ran those things up. I mean, it was just another deal. It was kind of ridiculous. What the hell are they doing up there? Be down here fighting. They had quite a show on that after it was all said and done and didn't amount to really a hill of beans. I mean, they ran that flag up. So they ran the flag up. But they did have. It was a rough one. There were a lot of gunfire, regardless of where you went.
Where were you when the war ended?
I was on Maui. We were getting ready to head for Japan. We had all new ships sitting out in our harbor, Amtrak's the whole thing. We had everything new. And our destination was Japan. I would never forget it. We were about a couple days from going aboard. Things were pretty precarious. The ships were sitting out in the bay, Malaya Bay, and we were always looking out there, you know, and they were transporting things back and forth. And that morning, the word came out, the war's over. Holy mackerel, you never saw such a bunch of nuts in your life. I mean, it was in the morning. Some hadn't even gotten up yet. And boy, we're out on the main drag running up and down. That was a big, big deal. Yeah, the Japs had surrendered. There are nice new ships and all the new. We had brand new Amtraks. We were going to go there in style, but we never left.
Well, and maybe that's a good thing because you may never have come home. Have you thought about what that invasion might have been like? Had you gone to Japan?
Yeah, we didn't look forward to any of this stuff. Just about the time you think things were bad, they'd get worse. So overall, I never looked forward or backward at any of those operations. I mean, you didn't know what to expect. Generally speaking, they were poor. They were rotten. They were bad, bad, bad. Oh, boy. Little islands like Eniwetok and some of those, I mean, they would start off as being almost an innocent landing, and Jesus, the next thing you know, you're in the middle of Eniwetok. We stopped there. We charged the island, and I mean, it was so small that, I mean, you ended up on the other side. A very unpredictable affair. War is kind of unpredictable. I'm glad it's in the past. It spooked me for a long time, boy. I lost a lot of good buddies.
What would you say in those 6 years that you spent in the Marine Corps, what was the most difficult thing you had to deal with?
I couldn't put my finger on any one given thing because there was a number of them from Pearl on through. A little incident up in the Aleutians. We're closing in on this island and we're firing into the base there. Well, the base was inland. The ships had to go into a channel into the bay. Man, I mean, that thing had more explosives. I think it was one great big bomb because they got firing at us. It was just absolutely ferocious. It's amazing that we never got hit and sunk. Well, those Japanese, their eyes weren't too good maybe, but they were all around us. Like I say, there was nothing you couldn't expect. I mean, they seem to have a new one in their bag every time you turn around.
Has it ever been hard for you to believe that you went through everything you went through, that you were in the places where you were, and that you didn't get wounded or killed?
Yeah, very definitely. I amazed at it for many, many moons, I tell you. I still had my two arms and legs when I got out. Kind of a goofy head, but overall, it was quite an experience.
Well, and so often we talk about the wounds that we can see, the arms, the legs, the heads. We don't talk about the wounds that we can't see. And you said you had a goofy head. How long did it take you, if ever, to get past some of that and function?
I went along for quite a while. I mean, you don't realize it. You don't realize you're in that state. But I would get spooked over kind of nonsensical things that normally you wouldn't pay any attention to, you know. But it's kind of hard to put your finger on it. There were times where you get spooked. Spooked is a good word. That you're just not with it. You just don't like the thought of any of that combat stuff.
You start seeing things over again in your mind?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, I dreamt many a night of fighting that war. Yep, it all turned out. I've often thought about those ships sitting out in the harbor getting ready to go to Japan and what to look forward to. Really, it was a spooky affair.
Well, and there's been a lot of life since. So you had your family. You got into the tire business. There's probably a lot of people listening right now who probably bought tires from you once upon a time. But you've had a couple adventures here in recent years that I want to hear about from you. First, I believe when you were living in Minneapolis, you went on the honor flight to Washington, D.C., is that right?
Yeah. That was a jolly good flight. I really enjoyed that. We got to see the monuments there. I shook hands with Bob Dole and almost patted his wife on the back. Yeah, they got out at the monument, and I was down on the sidewalk with another guy, and geez, I take a look, my God, that's old Bob Dole. So I went over and shook hands with him. That was quite a trip. I truly enjoyed it. my son, the one here, he went with me. But the trip itself, and we could have spent a lot more time there.
Well, and I'm curious about a couple places I'm sure they took you. For one, that Marine Corps Memorial with the giant statue of the Marines atop Mount Suribachi, and that inscription on the side of Admiral Nimitz's quote, where he says, "Among the Marines in the Pacific War, uncommon valor was a common virtue." What was it like to go there and see that?
It was quite an emotional affair with me. I'm getting silly about the whole thing, I mean. But I think it was one of the greatest trips I'd had.
And you went to the World War II Memorial, where there's a wall of gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who didn't come home.
Yeah.
And you're standing there with a son who wouldn't have been born if you didn't come home.
Yeah.
What were you thinking about when you looked at that and you took all that in?
It was most impressive. I mean, it kind of got you. Yep, I think it was a great, great trip, the best one I've had.
Well, and that's saying something, because you took another one a few years later, 2 years ago for the 75th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. You were 100 years old, and you actually went to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
What did you experience there?
There was three of us, my daughter-in-law and her boy, and we went over there. We took on a few ceremonies there, and then, of course, I knew the island, so I took my daughter-in-law and the kid, and we ventured out from the Royal Hawaiian to Waikiki Beach. We spent a lot of time there prior to the war. See, I went in March 1st of 40, so the war didn't start till December 7th. Yeah, so I had a good time while it lasted.
So 75 years to the minute from when you were there raising the flag and seeing that first Japanese plane fly over, you're at a ceremony with all these other Pearl Harbor survivors right there in the harbor with the current commander of the Pacific Fleet giving a speech and honoring all you guys and honoring those who died that day.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out, you know, that's important to you. And I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us your story that only you could tell us.
That's the best I could do.
I think it's pretty amazing that you're 102 years old, and you're as clear and sharp as you are. Where does that come from? How do you explain that?
I really don't know. I'm lucky, I think.
You're lucky.
Lucky, they call us.
Is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
I've had a pretty good life. I've got maybe a little to repent, but overall it was pretty good. I've had a lot of sorrow, like we all have, losing my mother and dad and my sister now. Now I'm all alone. I'll be all right.
People always talk these days about the bucket list, the things I've got to do before it's all over.
Yeah.
At 102, is there anything you haven't done yet that you're hoping to do?
I'm sure there is, but I can't think of one. That's good. I like the way you put that. I don't know what more I could wish for. One of my big hopes would be, and it will never happen, is do away with the war and not allow any of this goofy stuff to get in the way of lives. And boy, that's terrible.
And the stories you heard from George Vandersloos today underscore how deeply he understands that characterization of war to be true. We can all hope and pray that someday that day will come. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.